This podcast was created by the Arts and Junior Cycle team for the Junior Cycle Talks channel.
Hello, my name is Mary Lowry and I'm an advisor with the Arts and Junior Cycle team.
I'm delighted this afternoon to be joined by Nadine O'Regan. Nadine is a native of Skibbereen in County Cork. She's an arts journalist and an award-winning radio presenter and producer, podcaster and editor. She has many strings to her bow. Nadine, you're very welcome and thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Nadine, I'm going to start off with a very broad question. If you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about yourself and about what you do.
Most broadly, you could call me a journalist, a broadcaster, a podcaster and an editor. I'm also a columnist and essentially pretty busy, I guess, is probably the best way to describe it. I'm the editor of the Business Post magazine, which is our weekly arts, culture, lifestyle magazine that comes out with the paper. So what I do every week is I both commission freelance people to write articles. I write articles myself. I work with a design team, staffers in the Business Post and production. And from Monday to Friday, the hours just fly by.
You said there that sometimes you will commission other journalists to write pieces as well for the magazine. Are there any people who contribute on a regular basis, or is it all every week starting
new
from
again,
scratch?
We have regulars who have been with us for a long time. So some of our book reviewers, our film reviewers, they know that every week it's built into their job that they will be taking on board the latest selection of whatever's on the cinema or picking out the latest book to review. So that provides a consistency both from the perspective of articles flowing in to the magazine for editing, but it also provides things like we can design templates in which they sit every week. The writers know that it's their job to provide us with them every week. That provides a really solid basis. And then there are a number of pages, feature pages, and fashion pages, food pages that are a bit of a movable feast. We may have them, we may not. For example, travel in the pandemic, those pages almost completely went by the wayside because they weren't seen as being useful to the reader, except for perhaps in their imaginations. Yeah. We also thought about the fact that, is it the right time philosophically in accordance with, say, government advice to be saying to people, hey, why not go to Spain? Maybe not. So you can imagine how at times certain design or features just change because of what's around us.
So I would imagine that as an editor of a magazine, collaboration is central to what you're doing.
One of the things about working in any newspaper is that collaboration couldn't be more important, because if you can't explain why you're doing something successfully to, say, the design team or the production team or your bosses or the people around you, you need to go back to the drawing board and start again. So it's not simply collaboration, it's also a process of testing. So you might say to somebody, I think this would be a great cover, and they might justifiably say, well, listen, what about this or what about that? So you're going to find your ideas challenged as well. So it's collaboration. It's also a healthy debate, a spirited debate.
You're the editor. So when you get the article in, what process do you need to go through then when the article hits your desk?
Well, immediately I check it to make sure it's really there. Never take that for granted and it is what you were looking for, because the quickest thing you can do to solve a problem is to immediately go, right, there is a problem. But once that's done and I've taken a very quick look at it to say, okay, this looks like a strong piece, at that point it goes through essentially a production process. I would edit it. It would then go forward to sub-editing, and the sub-editors in our production department do a thorough job looking for grammar quirks or problems, or the Business Post has a house style which every freelancer has to adhere to, and then they are putting on captions, they are formatting it, and all the small tiny quirks that you don't notice when you're a reader and you just have a very clean, lovely reading experience, they're there addressing that, and photo captions and the like. And then of course it goes through to our designers, so they have the job as well of either designing into the template, which I spoke about. The book reviews, for example, have a very set template, or they might have a completely free set of pages where they can bring a lot of creativity to bear on how exactly a feature might look. And that is it's a harder task, actually. So you try to get those features through early so they have as much time as possible. And then the article goes back to me, it's on the page, and I'm doing another read through. And then it gets one more read through from a legal perspective, and a freelancer has a quick look as well for an outside eye, because again, you can never have too many eyes on that process, because you're just one person at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So it's often the lawyer will come up with perhaps a problem that the average reader wouldn't have seen coming. And it's because our libel laws in Ireland are much tighter than in other countries around Europe and in the States. So something that wouldn't be a problem to write down and publish in a newspaper in America could potentially be a huge problem in Ireland. So freelancers might justifiably say, but why can't we include this? Because it's been published on the BBC, it's mm-hmm. been published in the New York Times. And we have to come back and say, we can't publish this because our libel laws are tighter. So in Ireland, you can get sued for more.
Wow, it's an extremely rigorous process.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a process that when you're on the outside of it, it feels like, I guess, a kind of a magic in a way, because what is the production process? How does it happen? Obviously, the internet has played such a huge role in speeding up processes. So we have very different ways of working now. And before, you would be passing paper to paper. You would write a page plan of what a 32-page magazine would look like on a piece of paper mm-hmm. and hand it to production. Whereas now, of course, we all have shared services online where we have access to seeing collectively how something could look. And that really informs and speeds up the process of creating a magazine or a newspaper.
Was there ever any chance that you were going to do anything else other than journalism?
I never thought I would do journalism at all. It just never seemed like it would be something that would have been the right fit for me, because I was so interested in books and music and the arts. And having been brought up in a local newspaper, and my dad was so steeped in and invested in local journalism and local news. And I suppose early on, I didn't really make the connection between what I was mm-hmm. particularly interested in and what a local newspaper would offer. My dad always said to me as well, don't become a freelance journalist. It's a really hard lifestyle and there's very little money in it. And he was right about that. It is a vocational pursuit. You can get so much from it. It can be so enjoyable and so fascinating to meet people who you admire, to interview them, to have the experience of writing a few articles that you're happy with and seeing them published. That's an amazing thing. But it's definitely a hard, hard route. And when I went to study in college, I had no particular plan to follow that route. But when I finished, I was working on a novel, and I just started writing album reviews for Hot Press, a music magazine, and then book reviews for the Business Post. And I was freelancing for the Irish Times and a bit for the Independent as well, just to make a living. Mm-hmm. And the editors were all really encouraging. And it was lovely to feel that I was doing something that other people were enjoying, and then readers would get in touch. And generally speaking, I was quite self-conscious as a writer anyway. So even though the process of writing was something that I had really wanted, I was the kind of person who would put everything under a bed rather than share it with anyone. So journalism kind of toughened me up a little bit, because in order to earn money, you literally had to publish the work. And I suppose I just got more and more into it. And then when I hit around 26, 27, I realized that I'd always been, again, so in love with music and sound generally. And I started to think maybe I could move into that area a little bit. So I started doing reviews for a TV show called The View with John Kelly. And I also started doing album reviews for the likes of Dave Fanning. And then I wound up doing my own art show on a Dublin station called Phantom FM. And I had a show called The Kiosk, which ran for about 7 years before I moved on to Today FM and TXFM. And on Today FM, I did a show called Songs in the Key of Life, which was just an interview show. And I suppose what I would take from this is I kept following my interests. I was obsessed with writing. I was obsessed with music. So rather than totally intentionally get involved with journalism, I kind of cherry picked what I loved and then built a career around that. It was a very precarious existence for quite a long time, but I don't regret a minute of that. So I don't think there would be an ordinary type job or with a better, more secure existence that would have made me happy in the way that what I was doing was making me happy.
You've talked about a very varied and a busy work life that seems to go at quite a frenetic pace. So the editing of the Business Post magazine is just one aspect of what you do in a working week.
Yeah, the Business Post magazine is a difficult in itself. It's tough. There's no two ways about it. It occupies a lot of my time. But I made a conscious decision that I would do my very best to continue to put time into all the other things that I love, because you want to get as much creative satisfaction from your work as possible. And the thing is, I love to create. I love to write, whether that's a column or an interview or a feature. I love to make podcasts. So I have my own podcast called My Roots Are Showing, in which I interview well-known musicians. And then I often at the weekend will contribute to radio shows. So I would do an entertainment slot on the Brendan O'Connor Show on Sundays. I also contribute to Arena, the Sean Rocks program on RT Radio 1, and I'd review albums. About 2 years ago, RTE asked if I would be interested in doing some cover work, and I've been lucky enough to get to do Rising Time, which is a brilliant show in the mornings, and then Late Date, which I absolutely love, which is just like late night tunes from 11 p.m. and it's incredible because you are bringing your own music taste to bear on the national airwaves. Mm-hmm. And I don't take that for granted at all. You know, I would be there with the playlists a lot ahead of time, thinking very hard about how to really make a set of tunes work for people from, you know, many different demographics. Yeah. Because RT Radio 1 has a really broad spectrum audience, and the stations that I worked for before probably were more youth orientated or more indie rock orientated. Mm-hmm. But RT Radio 1 is a completely different category.
And when you're doing the cover presenting, you don't just rock up to Radio 1 and say, oh, I'll play these few tunes. You're curating a show in a way, aren't you? What kind of amount of work goes into something like that? How much time would you spend preparing?
I was thinking about it the other day, and I think the best comparison for it is actually with teaching. Because you know when you start teaching a class, if you're a new teacher, mm-hmm. the amount of work that you have to do before you go into that classroom and teach is phenomenal. Mm. Because you have to teach at a certain level. You have to be delivering at the same level, you would hope at least, as the veteran teacher who has all that experience. So when you start first, you really have to bring your A game, and that comes with a huge amount of work. When I covered actually for Rising Time, Lillian Smith, who usually does it at the weekends, she gave me a great tip, and she just said, get up at 3. And I said, 3? I said, is that overkill a little bit, you know, because the show was kicking off at 6 a.m. And she said, no, get up at 3, because you need your voice to be in good nick. You need to chat to yourself in the car when you're driving in. You can't sound like you're shattered and you've just rolled out of bed. You have to actually sing in the car, chat to yourself. So I did that, and it was actually brilliant. And likewise, Cathal Murray and Fiacna Brainon, who present Late Date, have been amazing with the tips. Fiacna would say, do write down a script. Just make sure it's there so that if you need it, it's there and it's comforting and you won't get thrown and you'll know exactly where you are in the sequence of events. And another tip, just label everything, because it looks a bit like, you know, Starship Enterprise. So I put all the labels on for the different faders and how I'm going to use them, like big, clear, blocky explanations. And then once Late Date is finished at 2 a.m, I remove everything and pray that I haven't forgotten. But it just makes me feel very comfortable. Yeah. And it makes me feel sure that I have everything set up.
What you're speaking to there as well is the importance of preparation, the importance of professionalism. And for any job that you're in, it's always those small things, isn't it, that really are key to success.
Often with the magazine, what will happen is you'll read something, it'll be kind of fine, you'll read it again, and then you'll wake up at 2 a.m. and go, no, that's not right, and you'll suddenly know why. And it can be occasionally that we live in a changing world around language, and there are certain sentences that would be in very common usage decades ago that would not be appropriate now. Mm-hmm. And it is possible sometimes that an interviewee or even a writer could use language in a way that another group could find problematic. And so sometimes it will slide by you, and then it'll be that moment when you wake up and you go, no, that needs to change. We have to change that caption. And because of the rate at which language is being developed and transforming, mm-hmm. and we all have to look to how we speak. And I would imagine in classrooms, that's very important too, mm-hmm. that we're being inclusive through our language. We're making sure that we don't accidentally make someone feel that they're not meant to be, in my instance, a reader of the magazine, yeah. or that they're not included in some yeah. way.
So what's your preferred form then, print or broadcasting?
Do you know, I find writing very meditative and very absorbing. And I find the same with podcasts, and I just really enjoy radio. And then probably what I find more challenging is actually all the administrative work and the management work that comes with having a large number of people surround you and always be, you know, needing that email responded to, or maybe there's a commission that you've created that somebody needs some guidance on, or maybe you need to feed back to somebody. So there's a huge amount of moving back and forth between contributors, and also the work of the back and forth with publicists, because publicists are in touch all the time looking for their person to be interviewed perhaps, or hoping that they might get some coverage for a new book or a new initiative of whatever kind. So the emails that flood in every single day are overwhelming sometimes.
And so the creative process itself is not the difficult part, really. It's all of the things that surround getting this piece of work, in your case, the Business Post magazine, out on a weekly basis.
But I also think, like, you know, aspects of your work should be hard. You should be stepping up all the time, and you should be taking on new challenges. When I took on the role of editing the Business Post magazine, I knew ahead of time that that was going to be difficult, and I was going to have moments where I would say, this is really intense. But if you're not reaching beyond in your career and actually saying, right, I'm going to move up to the next challenge, then you're kind of just repeating yourself all the time. And I have learned enormous amounts, and I think without difficulty you just don't yeah. learn. So that has been very helpful. So even though, yes, I love writing, creating, making things, it's done me no harm whatsoever to spend that time, and also learning from other people in the company, and people have given me that help, which has been great.
Mm. What do you do when you feel overwhelmed? You know, that reaching, but also managing to look after yourself.
Probably the lesson that I've learned a lot is to not be afraid to reach out and say, look, this is a lot, mm-hmm. and I could use some help or some illumination or some insight, because people will help.
Absolutely.
And that's important to remember. And actually, a lot of the time when other people are involved, they will come up with ideas and they will be better at lots of things than you are. So you can grow a lot of strength from that as well. And it's been very useful to me at times to pick up the phone and say to somebody, look, here's what I'm thinking. I'm not sure. And just get their feedback. Yeah. And even if we have an absolute ding dong over it, you come yeah. away with more ideas, more energy.
And different and perspectives.
Different perspectives.
Yeah. And okay, let's talk a little bit about podcasting. I'd be interested to hear what advice you might give to students who wish to make audio texts and to teachers who want to support them in that.
In terms of advice, because I have occasionally taught in journalism, I would say, think of yourself as a brand. Say your audio text is the equivalent of a brand, and you say, right, there are three things that I want whoever gets to hear this to get. Do you want them to be informed, for example? Do you want it to be entertaining? Do you want it to be, in my case, it's often based around the arts. So just think about three things. And when you make the world very small like that and apply focus, it actually can really help you to say, okay, this is the direction I want to go in. You should absolutely follow your passions and you should follow your curiosity. But if you're creating something, you do need to apply focus and you need to apply limitations. So you have to say, we can't do everything. Mm-hmm. We can only do maybe three things. So what are the three things we want to do? What are the three things we want people to get from this? And just really hammer that idea home.
And for teachers then, if you are thinking about engaging your students in podcast and you're thinking about getting your students to work with audio texts, what advice might you give them?
I would suggest writing a script, a very simple script. And then even as an exercise, to have them start to go through the process of reading it out for audio and listening back. Because often what we really enjoy as listeners is we enjoy structure, where there's clear thought processes, so a script can be very helpful, but we also like informality. So we don't want to hear something that sounds very obviously read. So often for podcasts, what I would do is I do have that script in front of me, but I might wander off for a line, but then I'll come back to it. Just gain a little bit more intuition about what it is that they really want to achieve with sound. Because in sound, everything has meaning. So for example, if I pause, that actually has meaning in a podcast. Barack Obama pauses for longer than almost anyone else. And sometimes he does it and it can be funny, and sometimes he does it and it can add gravitas. But his pauses have meaning. And it's very important when you're dealing with audio to understand that everything that you provide has meaning. So listening back to yourself, growing accustomed to the sound of your vocal, and really understanding what it is that you're trying to achieve with that vocal. So it's interesting to think about your voice and where you can make it kind of really work for you. The two Johnnies, for example, have a podcast, and they've really built on the fact that they have accents and there's a camaraderie between them, and it's the two mates, the bromance, that they've made that work really well. Mm-hmm. I have a very neutral accent, so I've used that in different ways. I do more voiceover. So just really listening to yourself and understanding what it is that you have to offer.
You talked earlier as well about being features writer or a columnist, and I am just interested to know what advice you might offer to teachers who are trying to support their students writing in the classroom. How do you approach your column on a weekly basis?
A column in a magazine is very different from an op-ed column. So an op-ed, an opinion editorial in a newspaper, generally speaking, the intent there is to put a particular type of focus on a harder news issue. So it could be a political column, it could be talking about something to do with deficiencies from a governmental perspective. It seeks to essentially direct us in a particular way. But a column in a magazine is very, very different. The intent is to, I guess, establish personality, reflect interests in a kind of a more low-key way. So column topics for magazine writers could be something from popular culture in the magazine. You're actually trying to say, listen, we're going to give you a pleasurable read. We're going to allow you to feel better about things. We're going to show you whether it's beautiful fashion, interesting theatre, new books. You know, the idea is to read, become engrossed. And I don't think for a moment that every column will hit every reader every week, nor should it. There will be columns that will appeal more to certain people and less depending. But the hope is that over time, the fact that certain personalities always exist in the magazine mean that people will go to the page and go, oh, I'll have a read. What is she saying this week?
So it's comforting.
So people get to know you, and it's as simple as that. Mm. But people kind of grow used to it and it becomes part of their pattern. Mm. So it's a different rhythm to what's in the main section.
And what strikes me is if a student is writing a piece, that the personal voice is important in there.
Yeah, so your own voice is so important. And a lot of people write in other people's voices. They write the way they've seen other people write, and it doesn't sound true to them. So you want to try to use the voice that you use when you ring your friend on the phone and you want to tell your friend about the same thing that you want to write the column about, and your friend will go, well, what is this? And if you try to recall the way you spoke to your friend and the type of language that you used. And of course, writing is different from the spoken word, but columns, they are all about voice at the end of the day. And, you know, Roisin Ingle has a particular voice, Marion Keyes has a particular voice, and they sometimes have even particular phrases that they will always use that are very customized to them. And immediately, without even seeing the columnist picture or name, sometimes that this is mm-hmm. who it is. It's about trying to keep that personality intact, but also put it within a structure that actually works. So I would encourage people to use the I word if they want to, but to be careful of overusing it. If you're writing an 800 word column and you look down and you see I, that's generally not a great sign. So yes, the column is coming from you, but what are you describing? What are you talking about? Try and get the detail in there, because you might think that it's completely obvious what you're saying. You mm-hmm. have to use descriptive language that brings your reader correctly into the scene that you're trying to summon up for them. And if the language isn't quite there, then often as editor, I will go back to the person and say, look, I need more description. I need more of a sense of what you're trying to achieve. And if you're advising somebody on how to write a column, just ask them to say in two sentences what the point of it is. Ask them for the elevator pitch. You've got 10 seconds. What's the column about? If you can't answer that, you are going to struggle. So often if I go down a rabbit hole in writing, which we all do from time to time, before you know it, you've done like five paragraphs about something that was a complete tangent. Diversion. And you're like, what has happened?
Yeah.
And you need to go back and have the widescreen view and say, okay, what is the article about? Mm-hmm. What am I trying to achieve? What is the point? What is the mood of this piece? What is the intent? And how do I want the reader to come out of this feeling? And don't panic, just stop.
Mm-hmm.
For new writers, I do think structure is good. So sometimes what I would advise people to do is do the spiderweb structure, where they just get a blank page and just create little bubbles on the page, where inside of the bubble they write each of the points that they want to make in the piece, and then they join them up like a spider web, and then they start placing 1, 2, 3, 4 beside it. And mm-hmm. that can be a very good way of doing a decent summary before you ever start writing, so that you don't run out of energy halfway yeah. through. Never be afraid to just put up the hand and ask for a bit of advice. And remember, if you're not sure, think about the widescreen approach. Look at your structure, look at your voice, look at your description, and give yourself enough time. Try to be able to put it in the bedside drawer and take it back out again, or return to the laptop or whatever it is the following day with fresh eyes.
Nadine, it has been such a pleasure to spend the last hour chatting to you and listening to you. I'm most grateful.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, which was created by the Arts and Junior Cycle team for Junior Cycle Talks podcast channel. To hear more from Junior Cycle Talks, search for us on SoundCloud or anywhere you listen to your podcasts.